Renegade Health Radio.
Renegade Health Radio, Kevin Gianni with Frederick Patnaud. Hey, Fred.
Hey, I like how you say my name. My name, Frederick Patnaud.
Frederick Patnaud. Pop.
There's that little delay, that dramatic effect.
It's a good last name. What does it mean? Do you know?
Well, there are a lot of people. A lot. Now, there's a certain number of people in the U.S. with that last name. It's spelled differently because generations of ago in my family, some people moved to the U.S. So it's actually more found in the U.S. than in Canada for some reason. But it can be spelled in all kinds of weird ways. And ultimately, the family comes from France, and the name is from Latin. And it's Pater Noster in Latin, so our father.
Oh, interesting.
Which are the first words of the prayer in the Bible, which the family was selling on a necklace with the prayer written on it. So that's where the name comes from. And then when they moved to Canada, it was misspelled, right? So it became Paternod, you know. But yeah, so it comes from Latin,
our father.
So you can call me our. You can call me Dad.
So, Dad, I hear you get road rage when you drink coffee.
Oh, yeah. I had a coffee about 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago. It's just a really, really good Turkish coffee. Not Turkish, but Italian. You know the mocha makers, right? The mocha coffee machines. It's a little device that was designed in Italy, and it boils from the bottom up instead of the other way around. So you don't pour hot water on your coffee. You put water in the first compartment and coffee in the second compartment, and the last compartment is at the top, and the water boils up, and then the coffee ends up on the upper part, right? So it's a way to make your own espresso on the stove, right? And but it's I believe it's probably very concentrated because I loved it. But then I felt a little road rage after, a little irritation that I don't get when I drink, let's say, tea and things like that. So I'm a tea drinker nowadays. Maybe it's a bad habit. Who knows? I'm starting the day with some green tea, but I can't do coffee anymore. I mean, coffee is just way too strong and has a lot of negative side effects, a big crash. Also, I find it very acidic. Not that coffee itself is acidic. Someone mentioned that on a previous comment in the podcast that some people have found how to make coffee that's even less acidic or that's very alkaline. But the problem is not so much the coffee or the beverage being alkaline or not, is how your body reacts to it by producing stomach acids. So for me, it just makes my stomach acid, right? So that's why some people can't drink coffee. And that may be the reason why I experience kind of irritability when I drink coffee, and I don't when I drink tea. So I love green tea. Do you drink green tea or coffee these days, Kevin?
I don't drink coffee at all anymore. I'm off of it for good. And I think it has a similar effect on me. I get pretty amped up and pretty agitated when I drink coffee. And I, you know, I have a friend who says the same thing. He says he just turns into a monster when he drinks coffee. I talked to Dave Asprey about this. And if you guys don't know Dave Asprey, you should probably check out his Bulletproof executive site. He sells an upgraded coffee or a bulletproof coffee. And I'm sure you've heard of Bulletproof Coffee. He's got a great podcast. Real interesting guy, very cool guy. I know that I mentioned, you know, the grass-fed butter and coffee. He's kind of come up with that idea. I mentioned that last week. I think it's a good idea. I just think you don't want to go crazy with it. I want to be clear about that. But I talked to Dave about, you know, some of the issues around coffee, because he's, you know, he's in it, you know, he's in this coffee space, and I'm writing about it in the book. And there's a couple things that are happening. One, that there are actual toxins that are in coffee from mold. And some people react very poorly to those. The body wants to get them out very quickly. So they have to be processed very quickly. And so that can cause a little bit of agitation. So that's one side of coffee that many people you know, don't know about that they need to know about in order to be able to drink coffee if you want to drink coffee. The second is that his coffee has less caffeine than other coffees as well. So it has a lower caffeine ratio. And I think its effect on the adrenals is pretty intense. For me, I know that the coffee, you know, rips up my adrenals. It's a huge diuretic for me. Any type of coffee, even if I do drink Bulletproof coffee. So for me, that's one of those things that I've decided just to stay the heck away from because I get crazy. And I do drink green tea. I drink green tea every morning, and I drink anything from a puer, which is a fermented green tea. It's literally almost broken down. I mean, it's, you know, they put leaves in caves, and they let it sit there for, you know, sometimes 10 years, depending on, you know, how expensive you want to go, maybe even more. So puer is one. It tastes very earthy, very dirty. I mean, it literally takes like it, in some cases, if you get it, you know, it tastes like someone just pulled a bunch of leaves off the ground and dropped it, you know, that are in the woods that have been, you know, underneath all the new leaves that have fallen, but the old ones below, you know what I'm talking about, Fred? Like the stuff where you find the worms, you know? So like that's kind of like an earthy puer. Genmai cha, which is a toasted rice, green tea that I really like. And then, jasmine tea. I was actually just reading an article about a long-lived man in Japan, Okinawan, and he swears by jasmine green tea, and so I'm kind of convinced, not directly, but there is some research about jasmine green tea and its anti-cancer benefits. So for me, for someone who has cancer in my family, that's a big focus for me. So yes, I drink green teas. I probably have one to two a day. And the other tea I drink is Tulsi. So I drink a holy basil tea, which is very calming. So it's almost like, you know, you get a little stimulant from the caffeine in the green tea, which is not, it was not nearly as strong as any coffee high. And then I can calm myself down with the holy basil.
And did you know the jasmine or the dragon pearl green tea, jasmine tea is probably the lowest in caffeine that's been tested. And so just as an aside here, but I do want to mention a source for tea, and I don't know where you get your tea, maybe at Samovar in San Francisco, Kevin.
Yeah, we do get some there, yeah.
And I thought that the Samovar tea was good, and, you know, tea is kind of like wine, you know, except that you don't get drunk out of it. But it's this, once you get into this world, you discover all the nuances, and people describe tea the way they describe wine. You can become a tea connoisseur, and there is truly a world out there beyond Earl Grey. And it's quite interesting to discover and to start appreciating tea and making it the right way and so on. And, you know, people tell me, yeah, you could get teas at this store, and everything is a step up above the tea bags that most people know. Getting loose leaf tea is better. But then there are several, just like in the world of wine, there's several steps up that you can get into. And one is to get teas from small productions directly from China and Japan. So I think there's probably only one place to get this in North America at that level. And that's the Camellia Sinensis store that will link up with this. Now, I don't want to spread it too much because literally they have three stores in the entire province of Quebec. They ship from the internet some of their teas all throughout North America. But these guys travel every year to China and Japan. They actually make the trip and negotiate with these small organic farmers. And they bring back these teas that are just incredible. And they also go to India and Taiwan and other places. So it's a small operation, but I thought Samovar was good. And Samovar is pretty nice teas, but nothing compared to the teas from Camellia. So I got to send you some teas, Kevin, because yeah, some of those are just incredible. And I recently got this teapot. So there's different ways to make green tea, right? You can make green tea and infuse it for 3 or 4 minutes. But the problem with green tea is you don't want to use boiling water. You want to use water that is below boiling. And in Celsius, I don't know.
It's 175 Fahrenheit.
So that must be about 80. And some teas are even lower, right?
Mm-hmm. I have the chart here. I can go through it after you.
Yeah. So between 70 and 80 Celsius. That's the temperature for green tea. Now, the teapot method is actually a better method for black teas and some of the other teas like puer and so on. But for green teas, delicate green teas, the best method is where you have a small teapot that is designed so it has a filter around the edge where you pour. And it's the one I have is very, it's tiny. It's so cute. It's like, it's enough for 120 milliliters. So it's like 3 or 4 fluid ounces fit in that. And what you do is you put the water at the right temperature and you let it infuse for like the first infusion will be something like 30 or 45 seconds. And the second infusion will be very quick, like 15 seconds or 30 seconds. And then subsequent infusions, you'll double the infusion time, something like that. So something like could be, depending on the tea, like 45, 30, 30, 1 minute, and so on. So you make like a tiny cup at a time, like 3 fluid ounces or something like that, a little over that, 100 milliliters. And then you really extract the most flavor out of it without hurting the tea. And I was using the previous method before of just brewing everything, and it's just not the same, right? So this is, you know, when you get into tea, you kind of, you make these incremental improvements over time as you get more into it, and you discover new teas and better ways to prepare it. And it can be a geeky thing. Like people buy this Breville water boiler that, you know, heats up the water at exactly the right temperature. I have that. You have that. Oh, I don't have that. But I use a portable thermometer, and I just put it inside my water, and I know, you know, when to pour it and so on. So, I mean, there's different ways, but it's a cool ritual. I think coffee is also a ritual, but I think tea has more of a history of being a true ritual because it takes more time, you know, to prepare your tea the right way and reinfuse it. Coffee, you just make it once and you make an espresso and you drink it. I mean, of course, there's a whole art around it, but if you can't, you know, if you like a little bit of a caffeine boost, but can't do, can't do coffee, tea is a good thing. But once you get into really good teas, then it's even more interesting and it's even more pleasurable because I think it's also, you get probably more health benefits. I mean, some of the teas that I brew, you know, I only keep maybe 2 or 3 types at a time, right, in my house. But once I throw away the leaves, once, you know, they're done, it's like you see the entire leaf, like some of those teas, and it's like, it's beautiful. Like, it's like I just put some grass in my, I just put some actual vegetables, you know, some actual leaves in my water, and that's, you know, the tea that came out of that is the infused water infused with that flavor and those aromas, and of course the tea and some of the caffeine and all of the antioxidants and everything else. But it's totally different than coffee, or a tea bag, of course, is horrible. But without being a stub, if you like your tea bag, it's fine. But, you know, there's something beyond that. And yeah.
Well, Dr. Williams, you know, I've talked to him a lot about indigenous cultures, and one thing that he mentioned to me recently when we were doing an interview for the book, is everything's about the book right now. It's just, I've been spending so much time on it. He mentioned that every indigenous culture has a source of plant polyphenols, with, you know, antioxidants. That's where you get your polyphenols from. But I mean, you know, Chinese, Japanese, they have, you know, green teas, you know, white teas, oolong. If you look at the Karo, they have coca leaves, so they use coca. And they also use, munya as well. You look at, Mayans, and they have cacao, they have chocolate. If you look at, let's see what other ones. Coffee is kind of from the, you know, Arabias, you know, that area. So everyone has their polyphenol.
Is wine a part of that too?
Yeah, wine is. Yeah, wine can be a part of that too. So from the grapes and from the skins of the grapes, particularly. So every culture has one of these things. And the Nkoi, even the Nkoyans, who you know, the coffee comes from Arabia, but it's here in, well, not here, it's here in the Americas. It's here in the Nicoyan Peninsula. That's their source of polyphenol. So every culture, if you look far enough and deep enough, you'll find one that they have. And so that is in particularly long-lived cultures. So that is something. I mean, maybe it's not, within all of the things that are different of all those cultures in terms of, you know, what they eat and what they drink and what they do, that's something that is a similarity. So it may be something that we might want to adopt as well. But I do want to say that I didn't know until I got this Breville thing. I mean, I'd heard that some teas needed to be brewed at different temperatures, but I didn't know what they were. And I didn't know, you know, how to even measure it. And the Breville does a really good job of that, because I just press a button and I say, hey, I want green tea, and it sets it to 175. So if you're interested, I have this up here. I will give you a few different brewing temperatures in Fahrenheit for certain teas. So green tea, flavored green tea, oolong tea green tea and flavored green tea are 175. White tea is 175 degrees. Oolong is 195. Black tea, 195 to 205. Mate is 208. That's right under boiling. And then herbal teas are 208 as well. And then anytime you wanted to do an iced tea from a tea, you would double the amount of tea that you use. So if you use a teaspoon, you would use 2 teaspoons for iced tea for the same amount of ounces. So just an interesting tidbit.
And if you don't have the Breville, and there's a way to kind of figure it out, right? And I was able to figure it out over time by measuring the temperature. So what happens if you're
boiling?
Just
know now.
Yeah, you just, I know, but it's close enough for, first of all, if you pour, I know in Celsius you can translate for me, Kevin, but if you're boiling water on a kettle, as soon as you transfer it to a, let's say a glass container, like a glass measuring cup, it will lose 10 degrees Celsius immediately. So just the fact that you're transferring it in a cool container just dissipates a lot of the heat.
That's 50 then, degrees Fahrenheit.
Yes.
No, that's not right. That's wrong.
Let's say you're going from boiling to 90 degrees Celsius.
Right.
So maybe you can do the translation.
Yeah, it's not one for one though. I typed in, I have a converter.
But it's something you're getting closer to the temperature you want. And then the water will lose about 2 degrees Celsius every minute or faster, depending, when you poured it, it probably wasn't boiling water. I kind of wait until the kettle whistles. So that's maybe 95 Celsius. It's close to boiling temperature, but it's not boiling yet, like not roaring boil, right? So then you transfer it into a cool container and you wait three or four minutes, and it will be at the temperature for green tea. If you're making like a tea that is right below boiling, it's literally just the act of pouring from the kettle into your pot. That's the difference, right? So you don't actually need to do anything. And then for a tea that it's more like 90 degrees Celsius, so how much is that in Fahrenheit?
90 is 194.
So for a tea like that, then you would just essentially transfer it to your pot and then transfer back to your tea. So it's just, you know, a trick like that to know, because if you're a coffee drinker, you can find good coffee in most places in North America, you know, and I'm talking about nice espresso and place like now it's possible. There's lots of coffee houses. If you like wine, you're going to find good wine. But if you like really good tea, there's almost nowhere where you can get good tea. You cannot get good tea on any airline. You cannot get good tea at even the fanciest hotels in the world. You cannot get good tea at any of the coffee houses anywhere. That's like at the level we're talking about here, where it's made with precision. You can get it at Samovar in San Francisco, and then the places I've mentioned in Quebec, Camellia Sinensis, and then maybe a few other odd cities in North America that have like true tea houses. But I think it's something that's going to get even more popular when people get the idea. And now it's becoming commercial, where You know, you get companies at Teavana, but it's sort of in between, you know. It's sort of like what Starbucks is to coffee. Like, people are really into coffee, they don't drink Starbucks, right? Although Starbucks, I mean, makes a decent espresso, but it's, people really like their coffee. They like the beans in a certain way, roasted and blah, blah, blah. So with tea, I think it's going to be the same here. Right now, I think it's almost impossible to go somewhere and get like a true green tea.
Well, Teavana is like a fast food of tea. I mean, they have these teas, but then they add flavors to them. I mean, they don't even add some of the herbs that actually would give the flavors. You know what I mean? It's just kind of ridiculous. I mean, mm-hmm. You know, I can't even drink this stuff. I've tried it. You know, my nephew likes it, and I've tried it, and I like the fact that he likes tea. I mean, it's kind of cool, you know, to have, you know, him drinking tea. But at the same time, I mean, it's just not. It tastes like flavored stuff. You know what I mean? Like, this just natural. I mean, they probably use natural flavors, but it just tastes like natural flavor. It tastes too strong. It tastes too, you know, too sensory overwhelming. So, but keep in mind, you know, we're talking a lot about green teas and things like that, but some of these herbal teas are extremely medicinal, and, you know, ranging from coca, which you can't get in the US, but if you go to South America, in some countries in South America, you can have coca tea, and coca tea is great, particularly if you're in Peru, for altitude, for blood circulation. And it's nothing like cocaine, even though that the cocaine alkaloid is actually extracted from it, but you need a ton of coca leaves to actually, you know, produce cocaine. But there's a long history of using coca leaves, and the alkaloids, as well as some of the minerals from the coca leaf, are very beneficial for the natives who use that. There's chamomile here. There's detox teas. I mean, if you
rooibos,
yes, exactly. I mean, it's extremely hydrating. So there's so many different teas. You can go out and pick, you know, horsetail if you live near a stream or a wet area, and you can get a high silica, high mineral, horsetail, and then nettles. You can pick nettles and you can make nettle tea. There's things that you harvest from nature that you find just about anywhere. And all of these, the reason I'm talking about all of these is that one thing that Daniel Vitalis talks about that I really appreciate is the fact that we are missing variety in our diets in the way of other plant DNA. So other plant material, genetic material, we're missing, the variety of that sort of, material. I don't even know what to say. We're missing the variety of just having more plant material in our diet and plant DNA material. And so whatever that means to you, whether it means just the nutrients from these plants, or it means the actual, you know, genes or the DNA, or it actually means something else, the cells of the plants, it doesn't matter. It just means that's a great way to get more plant variety into your diet. And actually, by going out and harvesting some of these wild herbs, or getting them from great sources, even mountain rose herbs, you can find a lot of these herbs that are you know, highly high quality and well sourced. And you can just add more plant into your diet by drinking it, not by having to eat, you know, all these different find all these different foods, say at your local grocery store if you live somewhere where you don't have a lot of variety.
And I'm glad that you mentioned these other teas, Kevin. I could also add to that the hibiscus flowers dried hibiscus flowers makes a pretty mean tea. The important thing here is that, you know, to get the variety, but also understanding that if you get into tea, green tea, puer, all those teas are stimulants, right? They have also a diuretic effect. So you don't want to drink too much. You don't want to be tanking on that tea all day, right? Have a, you know, a cup or two or three in the morning, and that's it. And the rest of the day, you can drink other stuff that's more truly hydrating.
Yeah. Didn't you say you had some tea the other day and you were late?
Yeah. Yeah. I went to Camellia the other day, it was yesterday around 3 or 4 PM. And I ordered the most expensive tea on their menu. It's $12 for the tea, right? But I wanted to try this Gyokuro tea. It's this really high-end, hand-harvested tea. And it's just as good as it sounds. Like it's the most delicious, amazing tea. It's like you're drinking the broth of bok choy mixed with other flour essence. And I mean, it sounds gross, but
it's so gross.
it is.
It's like drinking straight from the toilet.
No, but it's like when people describe wine, you know, they'll say that the wine has a meaty flavor, like of decaying animal flesh, you know, but some of the describers in wine are pretty ridiculous, right? But it's true. I mean, it's like, it's sort of how things mix together, and it's, you know, it's like some weird fruits like durian, like you can say they smell like rotten onions, but then it's kind of a, you know, it's you're using your imagination to find that weird smell, but the whole package is delicious. So that's kind of how this tea was. It was amazing, but just, you know, your mind is going crazy thinking of all the flavors you're taking in, right? And I was pretty wired up after that tea, because I think I ordered a tea that was meant to be shared, and I drank it all by myself. It was so good. And you kept infusing it in this teapot method where you're infusing like a, you know, just a small cup at a time. And I kept adding more and just reinfusing it. And it's a pretty high caffeine content tea, I found out later. And I also found out that it was a pretty high caffeine content because I was all wired up after and like, you know, walking. I must have walked like 15,000 steps in the day or 18,000 steps. And I walked all over the city, ran some errands, and then I just couldn't fall asleep at night. So I was telling Kevin before the podcast, you know, I'm kind of feeling a little bit tired today because it took me quite a while to fall asleep. And it was just from just drinking tea late in the day, and especially that kind of tea. But I did buy this tea. I bought a 25 gram package for like $25. So it's like $1 per gram. So, you know, every time I'm going to make it, it's going to cost me $5 to make a portion. But it's like the special occasion tea, right? And people, you know, won't think twice about spending $25 or even more on a bottle of wine that you drink once. And now I have like enough to make like this tea 5 or 6 or 7 times, right? So it's an expensive tea, but you wouldn't drink it every day, but it's a tea that on a special occasion. And in the morning, as I found and probably shared with somebody, is truly amazing.
I was working with a personal training client who was having trouble sleeping, and we did a food log. I kind of hesitated to do food logs, you know, for a long period of time for some people, but then I went into them because I realized that they were beneficial, because some people eat things, they just don't even know that they ate it, you know, like they just don't even know what they ate, you know, a day ago or 2 days ago, and they're just like, oh well, I didn't realize that would affect my health or affect my weight, and they're having trouble sleeping, and so I have them do a food log, and there was nothing there that I saw, and I'm like, well, did you include everything that you drank? And they said no. I said, all right, well, next time when I come back next week, make sure you include everything you drank. And they would have coffee at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I was just like, well, why don't you try stopping drinking the coffee at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and see how you sleep? And reluctantly, they did. And the sleep was great. And I was like, man, you know, like it's
so obvious.
You know, it's so obvious, but it's not obvious to everyone, you know, and sometimes I even do it. Like I'll have a green tea in the afternoon, and I don't even think about it. And then I'm lying in bed. And then the next day I'm like, why didn't I sleep? And I'm like, oh, it's because I went to the coffee house to write. And, I had a green tea, and that's what happened. And I forget about it. And one thing that's really interesting, and I won't completely cover it here, but there is some genetic study out there that shows some people can actually break down caffeine faster than others. So for some people, there's a gene, and you know, I'm writing about this in my book, and we can talk about it more probably at another time, but because we're running out of time here. But there is a gene that you may or may not have that allows you to break down caffeine faster or slower. And if you're one of those people who breaks it down faster, you're one of those people who can drink coffee at night, like after dinner, like regular coffee, not decaf, and go right to bed. But if you're not that type of person, then chances are you have the gene. You don't need to go through gene tests to figure this out, but chances are you have the gene that does not allow you to break down caffeine faster. It stays in your body longer. That's why you stay wired faster. And that's probably why you like it more, because it like gives you more of that high. You know, you've heard people say, oh, I can drink coffee and I can fall asleep. I can go right to bed. And that's probably because they have the ability to process caffeine faster.
Well, I know I don't have that gene.
Oh, I don't either. Man, I actually, it's confirmed because I had my 20th. Well, you can check. You can check on your 23andMe.
Yeah. So you'll give me the name of the actual gene.
Yeah. And we'll have to post it too, just because now everyone's wondering, I'm sure.
Sounds good.
All right. Have fun with your tea, guys.
Yeah, this is the end. Explore. This is the end of the Renegade Health Radio Show.
Explore a new tea this week. That's your mission. And tell us what it is, or tell us what tea you guys enjoy the most. Thank you. Bye.
Renegade Health Radio.